guys, hey, it's Curiosity here, and well, look, the thing we're going to talk about this time round. I know a lot of you are listening to this show via Time Warp, so you know, you could be listening to this back in somewhere like 2016. That's a long time ago from where we are, but you know, just in case you are listening to this and you're worried about the fact that we maybe could be, I don't know, spoiling something about a certain film, just be advised that as far as we're concerned, everything's 500 years in the past, so there might be spoilers. Really sorry about that, guys, but you know, that's just the way it is out here in the far distant reaches of the this crazy universe in which we're surrounding. But hey, it's gonna be fun.
An alien starship with an insatiable curiosity about Earth's science fiction and fantasy trivia. The crew, two hapless astronauts who have spent their lives immersed in strange new worlds of the imagination. Now, Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden roam the universe, trying to find the way home, seeking to define the A to Z of SFF.
I want to talk about it's really sweet, and it's got his dad and his son, and there's all sorts of throwing about, and it's really emotional, and I just think it's great. So why don't we talk about this one next? It's called Midnight Special. Let's talk about that, shall we?
Yes, Jeff Nichols, 2016 sci-fi, homage, is that too strong a word, to films like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Starman?
Is it too strong? Well, I don't know. I think Midnight Special is very much its own thing, but it does have certain stylistic tropes that I guess could lead you to think, yes, you know, it's Spielbergian. It is definitely... there's an element of John Carpenter's Starman in there, but I think there's enough of its own feel going on to make it something a bit more than just pastiche.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You can't deny that it's sort of very deliberately sort of treading in that territory. I think this film, this is one of those genre films where it doesn't work without having those previous films being made. You know, it's almost a comment on the way things were done before and saying we're not going to do it that way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So, Rob, what's Midnight Special all about?
Well, it's at heart, it's basically a chase movie. It's a story about a father and son, and the son has... Well, the son is basically... being chased by various different special interests groups that see something in him that they want. So he's being chased by the government. He's being chased by a religious cult who, as the movie goes on, it transpires was actually a cult that the boy and his father used to belong to. And as we go through the film, we discover that the boy does actually have special powers and may not be everything that he initially is shown to be.
Yeah, I mean, on the face of it, you could take the kind of plot and think, because it does, when you read, when you sort of hear about the plot, it does feel like, okay, this is kind of a blockbuster type idea, right?
Yeah.
You know, this sort of high concept, you know, lots of action, you know, big sci-fi things, you know, special powers, you know, maybe there's a bit of X-Men in there, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's, you know, and you could absolutely do it the sort of big OTT way. I mean, I was reminded when I first started watching the film of Stephen King's Firestarter.
Yeah, very much.
And I was kind of comparing it to the movie adaptation, which is kind of like the polar opposite in terms of kind of the emotional beats, because it starts sort of ramped up to 11 already with this sort of, you know, with the kind of intensity and, oh my God, they're after us and whereas this, it's kind of, everything's really, really dialed down, and it's kind of, and mysterious, and it's quite an opaque movie. It's sort of, it doesn't really, it's very jealous about its secrets, and it doesn't dole them out to you. It doesn't sort of sit you down Inception style and say, okay, this is where we are right now, and this is what you need to know here. It goes on its way, and you just sort of pick out little cherries of information, and that's rewarding up to a point. The question then becomes, does it sort of, in the end, does that become frustrating that it doesn't kind of really give you all the answers?
I don't think so. I'm a great believer in a film kind of not holding you by the hand and leading you through every kind of idea and story beat that you've got going on. So I kind of like the fact that Midnight Special is a film that keeps things sort of close to its chest, and it sort of doles out information as and when it's relevant to the plot. So, you know, why not go in cold? Why not sort of have the audience kind of figure things out for themselves?
No, I mean, I would agree with that for the first part of the movie. I was absolutely sort of loving the fact that it wasn't going the typical blockbuster route, you know, and I wasn't really expecting that necessarily from it, because I'd seen some of Jeff Nichols' previous films at this point. You know, he's just, at this point in his career, he's just sort of coming off Marden Takes Shelter, mm-hmm. and, you know, he's been lauded as this new important voice in indie cinema. So this is kind of, I guess, his first studio film in a way, but it's still very much rooted in the sort of sensibility of how he's been doing things before. So, you know, I was initially excited, and I was intrigued by the mystery. You know, what is it about this kid? You know, we should say that, much like Close Encounters, the whole sort of plot is about everyone sort of going to this particular point. Obviously, in Close Encounters, it's Devil's Mountain, where it is here, it's this particular grid reference where, for some, it's kind of prophesied that he has to kind of go to at a certain time, because there will be, you know, a revelation of some kind.
Yeah.
It's kept very mysterious, but you know, that gives it this sort of like ticking clock element, and this kind of like they have to get to this place. And as you say, you know, you've got various people after him for their own ends, mm-hmm. or wanting to protect him. There's this traveling unit. You have Michael Shannon as the father. Mm-hmm. You have Joel Edgerton as his friend, who has a really interesting arc and a really kind of unusual one. And I really enjoyed his character.
Yeah, me too.
And you're not initially sure what his relationship is to the boy, and then you have the boy himself who's. Seems very strange, almost alien-like in his kind of how accepting he is of this kind of situation, and and then you get the gradual reveal of his powers, and then and then on their journey they also pick up the mother,
played by Kirsten Dunst, who we've not seen in a little while, actually, have we? And
well, you know, at that point in 2016, that was true. We hadn't seen her in a while. I mean, I think she'd been doing some TV, but yeah. But it was, I mean, it's a very different performance from, say, her work in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films. But I found the obfuscating nature of the sort of storytelling a little bit frustrating as we went along. But what kept me going was the emotional core, was the sort of like the, was the Michael Shannon character, was how deeply you could see he loved his son and would do anything to protect him. And that, you know, is going to, you know, and that's obviously going to strike a chord with a viewer. It's just a really, really easy character to sympathize with.
Absolutely. I mean, Jeff Nichols and Michael Shannon obviously are a pairing that have worked together before, but here I think they're both playing massively to their strengths. Michael Shannon is just career best in Midnight Special. I think he's like the film itself. He kind of reveals himself gradually and slowly, but you know, with each layer that gets peeled away, you just see something that you like more and more and more. So you know, it's a brilliant performance from an actor that really just is going, certainly in sort of the early 2000s, you know, the 2016, the 2010 to 2020, he was just doing amazing work. And I'd say Midnight Special was definitely a highlight of that run.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, he's great in it. And I think what's nice is, especially if you have been, you know, watching his sort of films around this point, is he had slightly gotten sort of tagged with this guy is a good villain. You know, so we recently, you know, so we'd seen his General Zod in Man of Steel. And also the remains of General Zod in Batman vs. Superman and Dawn of Justice. So, you know, we've seen, and that's kind of quite one note compared to what he can do, you know. But then equally, you've seen sort of much more kind of twitchy sort of, you know, work in something like Bug, the William Friedkin movie. He was a really good actor, and this is certainly like, you know, the sort of prime of his work, I think. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think on the whole, just everyone is playing to their strengths. But you know, you do need to give a shout out to Jaden Lieberher, playing the boy, who is he's incredibly vulnerable, but with this sort of inner core of strength and certainty as well. You know, there's a moment just after you think he's on the verge of death, when he comes back from that. He's almost messianic, I'd say. He's got that kind of real core of certainty of what he is and what he's got to do. And that transformation is just amazing. He's just so, so good in this film.
I think it's a very nicely judged performance. And you saw from Jeff Nichols' previous film, Mud, that he's very good at getting these nuanced performances out of younger actors, and you definitely see it here. I think the messianic thing is key, really, because this film, although it's science fiction, it's definitely not hard science fiction. It's almost a religious movie, because it's kind of take on where the power is coming from and the significance of it, and the significance of the final reveal is definitely a kind of a spiritual one. You know, you have the kind of, you know, the Messiah parallel, and you also have the, you know, the, well, should we talk about the final reveal?
Yeah, why not? Let's risk that, shall we? So it emerges towards the end of the movie that the boy is not actually of this time, shall we say, or even of this universe. He's kind of a stray. He's a refugee. I think that's not quite the right way of putting it. But
of this time, I'm not sure I got that. But yeah, sorry, carry on.
Okay, of a parallel universe, shall we say? He's kind of slipped from one universe to another, and from there, yeah, everything's been about him finding his way back home, effectively.
That's true, but I mean, it's this being the way of the film, I think it's more ambiguous than that what the relationship is. I mean, I think it's clear that, I mean, he does, you know, he doesn't say, "I'm not your actual son," does he?
So
it's a sort of sense that there are kind of, say, maybe, you know, certain bridges between our world and this world they describe as sort of being on top of our world, but in the same place, which kind of makes it sound a bit like heaven. You know, all these people looking down on us, watching us for a while, interested in what's going on, having special powers.
Yeah, but sort of distanced at the same time. So, you know, there's the, you know, what influence do they have, if anything? That's never really touched on, but you kind of have to wonder, don't you, whether there is something more to what this universe sort of mapped over ours actually can do, seeing as it is so much more advanced, obviously.
Yeah, that's it. And then, you know, when they get to the point that at the designated time, there is, you know, essentially a portal opens up, which reveals their world on top of our world. And we get a kind of Tomorrowland style sort of, you know, futurescape revealed.
It's kind of an odd one, this, because you have this very sort of realistic, as you say, the futurescape, you know, these buildings with huge sails coming off them and weird little towers, this whole sort of weird kind of Mega City One kind of dealy. But the inhabitants of the world themselves actually don't seem to be that solid, corporeal. You know, they're kind of lights with a vague sort of human outline to them, which kind of makes you wonder again exactly what they are. Is this some sort of disguise they're wearing, or is there a bit more here that we haven't picked up on?
Yeah, or is this just how they are appearing to us because of how it's sort of translated this weird kind of crossover? Yeah, we don't really know, as with a lot of things. I mean, I think an interesting sort of reference point here that the director talked about was the short film The Third and the Seventh. Are you familiar with this, Rob?
I'm not familiar with this.
Basically, it's a short by Alex Roman, which is like a groundbreaking piece of sort of CG animation, which sort of looks at kind of architectural art and sort of translating these sort of perfectly realized CG sort of future buildings into different natural spaces, and then sort of gradually sort of tipping it into a sort of surreal kind of future world. And it's it's definitely worth checking out. It's a 12-minute short. I wouldn't necessarily call it a science fiction film, but you could almost view it in through that lens.
Right.
With this kind of, I think, Michael Nyman score that the filmmaker borrowed. But it's 2009. I mean, and that was one of the key sort of reference points for Nichols. And in fact, he tried to get Alex Roman to kind of come on board to work on the effects. But as it was, they just kind of used it as a sort of starting point.
Right.
But it's an interesting thing. There's also I'm struggling to remember the name of it now, but there's that do you remember that short story from the author of Neuromancer, William Gibson, where there's like a sort of parallel world with sort of, you know, what if the 1950s it's sort of carried on. I'm trying to remember what it's called now.
Do
you know what I mean? Where
I do,
this,
yeah.
This world where everything's sort of like fins and kind of, you know, aluminium and sort of shiny futurism, which is a really good short story that I'm just blanking on the name of, sadly. But it sort of reminded me of that, the kind of look of it, you know. It's certainly striking, and you kind of wonder what the world will be like after that sort of revelation.
I think the story you're thinking of is the Gernsback Continuum.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Yep. yes, which is an absolute joy, and obviously that sort of retrofuturism is kind of something that Gibson touches on a little bit throughout his work anyway. That, you know, that's a lot of his work is kind of hard-boiled 50s with a SF twist to it. But there you go, we're sort of wandering a little bit off the reservation there.
We are, but I think I was just trying to make the point really that there are some nice sci-fi ideas in here, you know, it doesn't sort of take the kind of Close Encounters route at the end. It sort of it does, you know, go off the reservation in a good way. Yes,
yeah, definitely. It's certainly one of the more thoughtful science fiction movies of that whole sort of 2010 to 2020 kind of renaissance, I guess, of intelligent science fiction, but you hadn't really seen in the cinema since really the 70s, I guess, you know, stuff that's a little bit more cerebral than your average kind of Zap Gun and Little Green Men stuff that, you know, it has always been the kind of default position for science fiction, I guess, certainly cinematic science fiction. That's a broad stroke declamation, and I'm sure you can pick it to pieces if you want to. But you know, all I'm trying to say is that Midnight Special is a great movie if you're not necessarily a big science fiction fan. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Midnight Special is a really nice family drama that happens to have some sci-fi in it.
There you go. That's what I meant to say.
Is another way of putting that. Like I say, I find aspects of the storytelling as it goes on a little bit frustrating. There's such nice things in this. I mean, we haven't mentioned Adam Driver.
No, he's brilliant in it.
Kylo Ren himself sort of popping up as the sort of scientist who has his kind of world shattered in a good way. There are lots of nice incidental details and sort of surprising turns, which kind of, you know, which for me kind of overcome maybe sort of some slight niggles I have with the storytelling. Because I understand that Jeff Nichols actually sort of filmed a lot more and then just pared it right down in the edit. So, you know, to the point where I think maybe he took a little bit too much out. But, you know, ultimately, I think it does work. And that's without even getting into the sort of discussion about what the final shot means.
Again, I like my science fiction particularly to have a little bit of mystery to it and a little bit of you know, going away and discussing what things like the final shot mean. So no, I love Midnight Special. I love the approach. I love that sort of pared down kind of way of eking the story out. I just thought it was so successful on so many levels, and so yes, recommended that one, I reckon.
Curiosity, what do you think?
Oh, guys, that's brilliant! Thank you ever so much. I agree. I think it's a fantastic little movie, and I have to say, I've been in contact with the guys that live in the universe that's mapped on top of our universe, and they just wanted me to tell you that you've got the whole story completely wrong. Sorry about that, but hey-ho, there you go. Let's go! Over there!
A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickens and Clive Ashenden, with additional voice talents of Maria Thomas. Music and editing are by Dalil Hallow of the Creation Station of Caddisham, all the way form you can eat. Do you want to know more? Search for the A to Z of SFF on iTunes, Facebook and Twitter, or check out www.theatozofsff.com.